Now it's time for the Barber Shop. That's where we gather a bunch of interesting folks to talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in their chairs for a Shape Up this weekend are Kevin Blackistone, sports columnist, contributor to ESPN's Around the Horn. Kevin, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Out in San Francisco, waiting for the start of Super Bowl 50, Kavitha Davidson is a sports writer for Bloomberg View. Hi, Kavitha.
Hi.
And also welcome back to Wesley Lowry, reporter for The Washington Post. Good to see you, too.
Thanks for having me.
So is everybody looking forward to Super Bowl Sunday?
Of course.
Every time, always.
And getting it over with.
And getting it over with. I can imagine for those of you who are not civilians, right? The rest of us, it's fun. For you all, it's work. But before we start on football, I have to ask you about some news from the world of college basketball. I'll start with you on this, Kevin. On Friday, the University of Louisville announced a self-imposed ban on postseason play for their men's basketball program. Of course, the team would have been a lock for the ACC and for the NCAA tournaments. And I think we talked about this before, that the program has been under investigation after allegations that the team or somebody connected to the team hired exotic dancers and escorts to entice recruits. So, Kevin, how big of a deal is this?
Well, it's a huge deal. This is another embarrassment personally for Rick Pitino, who's the coach under whose watch this apparently happened, although he says he has no knowledge of it. The NCAA calls that lack of institutional control. And I think given the lurid nature of these charges, I've said it before, I've written it before, Rick Pitino should step aside.
I don't get the self-imposed ban piece.
Trying to get ahead of the NCAA. They're trying to say, look, we are acknowledging we have some problems here. We're going to penalize ourselves first. So hopefully, if you decide to penalize us, you will be a little bit more lenient.
Has that ever happened?
Well, yeah, it happens all the time. Yeah,
does it work? Do people?
It does work. It's a card that people play all the time.
Kavitha, what are your thoughts about this? Go ahead, Kavitha.
Well, I think you always have to look at what the school gets out of it. And, you know, this isn't some magnanimous, we're mea culpa, we're admitting that we did something horrible and you know, we deserve to be punished, so we're just going to go and do that to ourselves. They're trying to evade a similar decision by the NCAA, which likely would have come after this season and would have affected their future recruiting.
Okay. Well, a lot to think about there. It'll be interesting to watch, particularly as March is soon upon us. And it will be really interesting to see what happens as the, you know, with March without the University of Louisville will be kind of interesting. So, all right, on to the Super Bowl. If you are breathing in the United States, then you are aware that whether you care or not, the Carolina Panthers, the Denver Broncos, they're going head-to-head in Super Bowl 50. It will be held in San Francisco on Sunday. But, Wesley, I'm going to go to you on this because you're our kind of a civilian, right?
Yeah, exactly. Right. You know, I'm sitting here taking this in.
Taking this all in, right? You know, this is a year, I'm going to go to our sports professionals in a minute, but this is a year in which there's been so much around the sport. There's domestic violence. There's the cheating scandal. There's publicity around the health effects of the sport. Is any of that swirling in your mind as you watch this event?
Of course. I mean, I've actually seen the last few years, you know, and I used to be a very adamant follower of the NFL. Basketball has always been sport number one, but football was a close second. And as these types of stories have boiled up time and time again, these questions, whether it be ethically, whether it be cheating, whether it be health-wise, you know, what does football mean and what does it mean to us culturally, but also what type of environment is it fostering? It's made it hard to continue to be as adamant and as diehard as a fan of the sport. I'm surprised very often when I go to talk to a buddy from high school or a buddy from college, and I'm just asking them, you know, my buddies are all in Cleveland, so, you know, how was the Browns game last weekend, X, Y, and Z? And so often they're also talking about, yeah, but did you see that movie about concussions or so on and so forth? I've got friends now who are getting married and having children, and so we're having these conversations about, oh, well, you remember back when you were the wide receiver and I was the running back, and would we let our sons do that type of thing now, right? And so I do think that in the national consciousness, there's starting to be more of a conversation about, again, the role of professional football and football by and large, and what that means for us as Americans, and maybe what's fostered in kind of the culture of football more broadly.
Hey, Kavitha, you know, you're in San Francisco. I hear that you attended the NFL Women's Summit, which was held on Thursday and Friday. Is this the first time the NFL has held a women's summit? What was that all about?
This is, and it was very encouraging. You know, Roger Goodell came and he spoke for about 15 minutes, and he announced the implementation of basically the Rooney Rule, which is a rule that currently exists in the league that requires teams to interview minority candidates for head coaching positions, and he announced a version of that for women in executive roles, which is an interesting idea. We're kind of short on details right now, and the Rooney Rule itself has been criticized because it hasn't actually been particularly effective. You know, you can interview as many minority candidates as possible, but that doesn't necessarily translate into hiring. It will be interesting to see if that actually does translate into better investigating of players, better player discipline, better programs to prevent, in the first place, domestic violence from happening. And then also just, you know, other less nefarious things, whether we can engage female fans better. So hopefully it will lead to a more inclusive environment.
Well, what, can I ask you this? And it's a little bit of an icky question, but I'll ask you, Kevin, this whole question of, okay, so now the league is going to reach out to women. How does that sit with you as an African-American man when you feel like the sport is 75% African-American
right.
men, the players are 75% African-American men? And I'm not trying to set up a
sure. No, but
girls versus the boys. But
no, it's a very fair question, because one of the little secrets about Title IX, which has been around since, 1972, is that it has had a greater positive impact for white women than for women of color, many of whom we see playing in the one revenue generating sport on the women's side in college, and that's basketball.
And why is that?
You know, I think because people still need to be broken out of their old ideas about who can serve in a leadership position.
What do you mean by it's had a greater effect for white women than for African American
women?
Well, there
have been more. Well, I think more. It's been reported quantitatively that more white women have benefited from Title IX in terms of participation rates and in terms of employment rates in college athletics than women of color. But women of color have a greater face when it comes to being the face of college athletics, particularly in basketball, than a lot of other people. So they don't feel as if they get as fair of a shake in college athletics as some others.
Kavitha, you have thoughts on that?
I think Kevin's absolutely right, especially if you look at head coaching positions and, you know, athletic director, assistant athletic director positions. White women have benefited from Title IX in that respect much more than women of color have, despite the fact that they're coaching teams that mostly do are comprised of women of color. You know, the other side of that, of course, is, you know, not to get into who's the more oppressed minority kind of thing. If you look at salaries compared to what their male counterparts are making, you know, everybody still has ground to make up when it comes to catching up to the white men in these fields.
Leslie, before we let you go, I have to ask you about this. And, you know, a lot of people are watching Panthers linebacker Thomas Davis, who has a broken arm, who had surgery on it, but he says he's ready to play, doesn't want to miss the Super Bowl. I just have to ask you, you know, as a fan, I don't know how to think about this. I mean, on the one hand, he's a grown man, but
it's tough.
What is up with that?
And that's why it's hard in some ways to judge it one way or the other. Because, you know, here you have someone who has spent their entire adult life working towards a singular goal. You know, this is the type of thing that you very well may only get one opportunity to do. And I know, I mean, I got brothers, both of whom are still college athletes right now, both of whom have gotten injured before. And we're saying, all right, yeah, you can't, one brother, no, you can't wrestle because this is hurt. The other brother, no, you can't do the long jump today because you got hurt. No, but if I don't do this, then I can't go to the postseason, then I can't, you know, athletes are so singularly focused very often, and they're driven that way. But to tell a guy who's a professional football player, your team's in the Super Bowl, but you can't suit up, I can understand why he wants to go out there. That said, I'm going to watch the game and be worried the whole time that he's going to end up sprawled out on the ground. And it's concerning a little bit.
Wesley, can you envision a time when you would just say to yourself, no, I can't. I'm not going to watch this?
I mean, I don't know about all that. Right. I mean, the part of me would like to say yes, but at the end of the day, you know, I'm not going to not watch the Super Bowl because an athlete's out there wanting to be an athlete. You know, if he gets hurt, he gets hurt. We've seen bad injury. We can see a bad injury. Any other player on that field could get hurt pretty bad.
That's true.
Yeah, we valorize playing through injury in sports. I mean, growing up, I remember Jack Youngblood for the Rams playing with a broken leg. I remember Ronnie Lott with the 49ers amputating a part of his finger so that he could continue to play. I mean, this is part of the lore of sports. As crazy as it seems to the rest of us, if I break my arm, I'm not working for like a week, and all I do is write.
A very valid point. All right, before we let you go, I'm sorry, I have to ask each of you this really important question, and, you know, I hope you don't mind, but Kavitha, I'm going to go to you first. Wings or pizza?
New Yorker, I'm going to say pizza.
Oh, okay. Okay. Kevin?
Wings, so I'll pass on the gluten.
Oh, okay. Just be like that with celery. No doubt.
Of course.
No doubt.
So, I'm still on the young person diet, so I eat a lot of pizza normally, and so Super Bowl day, it's wings.
Well, buffalo or barbecue?
A little honey chipotle.
Oh.
Make it fancy.
Whoa.
Thanks to Kavitha Davidson, Kevin Blackstone, and Wesley Lowery. Happy game day. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.